Hello and welcome to everyone, and thank you for joining the National Association of Elementary School Principals, most often known as NAESP, Early Career Principals webinar. I'm Brian Parton, 2017-18 NAESP President and Principal of Ross and Robinson Middle School in Kingsport, Tennessee. For those of you who have joined us for the active conversation today, welcome. This webinar is being recorded and will be available in video and podcast formats in the near future on the NAESP website. Feel free to go back and revisit today's thoughts and or share with a friend or colleague. For our social media learners, please share your thoughts using the hashtag NAESPChat and follow at NAESP for current information designed specifically for principal needs. The mission of NAESP is to lead in the advocacy and support for elementary and middle level principals and other education leaders in their commitment for all children. If you're not a member, we extend a cordial invitation to join with us in advancing our profession and helping students. Membership information is available on the website, naesp.org. Today's webinar is one example of our support for principals. Our platform today will take a very broad overview of diverse topics of interest to the early career principal. Future professional learning opportunities will take a deeper dive into more specifics. To stay connected to NAESP and join us, we encourage you to stay connected to NAESP and join us for future offerings. As we all know, the principalship can be an overwhelming job, but the great news is that you are not alone, and others who share this rewarding profession are there to help along the way. Today's conversation, led by active principals across the U.S., will lend itself to a variety of topics relevant to a new principal or early career leader. Following all presentations, we will have a time of Q&A, so make notes of pressing questions during the webinar, and we'll provide further clarification toward the end. All right, to begin our time together, I'm going to actually have to deviate a little bit from our planned visit from Eric Cardwell and his colleague Melissa. Unfortunately, they've had a community event that has occurred, and their schools have had to go into a lockdown. So he and both of them are actually addressing that issue, and they certainly extend their apologies. However, our past president, Dr. Stephen Geis from North Trail Elementary in Minnesota, is going to share a few things that he does to support in the area of communication. And I may join in as well. So, Stephen, why don't you share some insight with us?
Good afternoon, colleagues. Thanks for joining us today. When it's coming to communication, I think the most important thing for you to remember is that you need to be the storyteller in chief, that the message needs to be crafted from you and sharing it and being transparent. And so when working with school staff, we typically have at our building one staff meeting a month if we need to. Otherwise, things are done through email. And email is kind of like fast food in small amounts. You know what? It's good. However, in too much, you're going to get sick. And so when you're sending out an email to the staff, to remember that it needs to be concise and no more than 3 points. And truly, when you are having a staff meeting, to make sure that it's productive and being used well. One of the things that I found this year to work in lieu of staff meetings is Flipgrid. If you haven't seen the app, check it out, in the sense of that you can send out a question or a topic and have your staff members respond just to you so that you could watch it during your time when you have it, or that they can interact with each other. And they really appreciated that because they're able to do it on their own time. Another thing regarding communication is that you listen. Listen. And listen more. And so that's why our dear Lord gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth, so that you're making sure that you're listening more than you're spending time talking. I just want to focus on one other thing, and that being student voice. When students have voice, they're 7 times more likely to learn. So what are you doing as your school leader to take the pulse of your students? I have the great fortune of being able to take students out for lunch typically once a week, and I love creating an agenda. And the questions that I get to ask them are, what do you love about your school? And then also I love to ask them, what would you like to change? That being, if you were principal for a day, what changes would you make? And then to share that. And we actually surveyed our community and asked them, were they reading newsletters? Were they reading their Friday folders? And the answer was no, that we actually did a drawing and asked them to respond back to communicate that they were reading it. So we use all social media that I'm going to touch on later in this presentation. And with that, I'm turning it back to you, Brian.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. I just would like to add to that, just kind of reiterate that point about student voice, but that also carries over to teacher voice, community voice as well. Making sure that you're really understanding the pulse of all three of those very important entities that feed into your school are so vitally important. So having opportunities, whether it be through the PTA, community open community meetings, forums, surveys, as Stephen mentioned, any of those will be helpful to you to keep a pulse of what's going on and how they're feeling about not only how you're doing but how the school's doing and what you can do to continue to improve and work towards meeting your vision for the school community. Also,
with students, Brian, I was going to chime in and just share with them too, and I'm sorry that I forgot, is with that voice, is that with the staff meetings typically once a month, I actually have an office meeting once a week, and I also would encourage these new principals to have a meeting with their support staff. Try to meet with them once a month during their time, as well as cooks I meet once a month and our custodians, and it's a way for them to be able to share things that are happening that we may miss and see out in the building.
That's a good point, Stephen. All of the adults certainly that are working in your school community are important and need to have an opportunity to share their voice and understand, to help you understand what's going on and how they're experiencing the daily school life and what's going on. They, as many of you I'm sure know, have a good understanding of and the students are sharing things with them, and so that insight is certainly important. Back to the student voice, I would just say, as we're concluding this section, provide opportunities to promote student leadership, whether you have a student council, which I would encourage you to look at our American Student Council program that we have through our NASB.org website. We have some great materials and resources there for you. If you haven't started a student council or if you're interested in that, please explore and look into those options and open up that opportunity for those student leaders to really give you some good insight and share their experience, because you certainly will find out that it varies greatly from what the adults experience is in your school community. So thank you again, Stephen, for those words. Of the myriad of principal responsibilities, instructional leadership must be a priority. Angelina Martino Finnegan is principal of Lake Hiawatha School in New Jersey. She will help us understand critical practices of instructional leaders.
Thank you, Brian. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm so delighted to be part of this panel and equally delighted to see so many of our aspiring principals joining us today. The topic of principal instructional leader and instructional leadership is a huge one, and it's an essential one for all of us if we're going to really support our mission of creating schools where student achievement is at the core of everything that we do. And it ties a lot into what we were just speaking about regarding the importance of communication. And I just pulled together a few bullets here to address some salient points. First, establishing clear, high expectations for learning and achievement for all. And when I say all, we're talking first and foremost about our students, but certainly about our staff members and ourselves. You know, how are we communicating that to staff? How are we establishing those expectations? Related to that, fostering open and honest communication about needs, challenges, and strengths. We need to create an environment where people feel comfortable and safe coming forth with concerns, with questions, with needs, with challenges. And related to that, sometimes we're overly critical of ourselves. We find challenges and needs and problems and things that we can do better, but we don't celebrate the strengths that we have. So fostering communication about both areas, in needs in terms of the challenges that we're facing, our needs, and also the strengths, very, very important. Because only when we have this honest communication can change happen when we're addressing the needs of others. also cultivating our professional knowledge base as the lead learner. You know, it's very important as the instructional leader that your staff members, your students, your families look at you as someone who can provide them with what they need. And what I have here in parentheses, while realizing you can't be an expert in everything, you know, we can't put so much pressure on ourselves to expect to know everything about every subject area, about everything that we're encountering in our schools that our students need, that our staff members need. But if we don't know who does, how can we cultivate teacher leadership? How can we tap those experts, tap people with expertise in areas that is going to help strengthen what's happening in our schools and also strengthen our leadership team? You know, if you're in a school where you have an assistant principal or an assistant principal, how do you cultivate that leadership team to really look at, take an honest appraisal of what your strengths are, and also bringing in other people that have strengths in other areas, maybe other subject areas, maybe other areas of expertise, so you can provide the most you can to your staff and to your students, obviously. Next, serving as a resource provider. You know, that's a huge role as an instructional leader, giving your staff the support, the resources they need. That might come in terms of professional learning opportunities, instructional resources and materials. Related to that, recognizing, promoting staff expertise, that teacher leadership, and create means for collegial conversation and sharing. You know, what does your staff need to allow them to do their jobs effectively, to be facilitators with their students? Oftentimes, we have new initiatives in our districts, and there isn't that support provided to staff members. So recognizing that as the instructional leader, that if we want our staff members and our students to succeed, we need to give them the tools that they need. And lastly, I just included here, honor the observation-evaluation cycle. That's really important. If as the instructional leader, you want to have a pulse of what's going on in your school, you need to be visible. You need to be present in classrooms. People need to see you on a regular basis. And the observation-evaluation cycle allows you to provide meaningful feedback, guidance, and support to your staff in a timely manner, which is essential, because only change can occur and people can recognize strengths and areas to improve and make changes to instructional practice is when these conversations happen. Related to that, also encouraging self-reflection is essential for all of us, for our staff members and for ourselves as leaders. So these are just a few areas in terms of being an instructional leader and instructional leadership that I wanted to highlight. The list, I'm sure, can go on and on. And thank you again for being here today, and I wish you the best as you continue on with your career journey.
Wise words, Angelina. Thank you. In today's world, and specifically the school environment, diversity and inclusion are a necessity, not a nicety, and not just for some students, but for all students. Joining us today from Connecticut, we welcome Victoria Reed. Victoria serves as principal of Highland Elementary School and will help us better understand how to create an inclusive environment.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here and to be a part of this webinar. I had the pleasure of being given the topic on creating an inclusive environment. So although I have two slides, it will not take too long. I have a couple of components that I want to share with everyone. Main thing is that creating an inclusive environment in our schools means taking a look at the different components of school, and there are many different components, and seeing how well they fit together. These components can include academic needs, social and emotional needs, school community members, parents, and while it is challenging, it is important to pay attention to all parts of the school community. Sometimes it looks like a puzzle, but the parts fit together nicely when there is attention paid to it. First thing I want to talk about is school culture. As new principals, it's important for you to know what perceptions are, what assumptions are, what beliefs shape the school. Are there written and unwritten rules? Who determines what the rules are? And is everyone's voice heard? Do the beliefs tell the story you want told? If the answer is no, take a step back. Start with a walk around the school. Take photos. Ask students, staff, and parents to also participate. Lay those photos out. Look at the story they tell. Rename challenges as opportunities. The key is getting everyone to participate. Along with school culture is climate. Are all members of the school community contributing to the success of the school? Are they valued, and are those members including non-certified staff members, the custodian, the office staff? Everyone should have a voice. The belief that everyone is supporting the school, supporting school success, is an environment where trust and openness are the foundation. Where there's trust and openness, students feel connected to at least and possibly more than one caring adult. Respect for differences thrives, the environment is safe, and offering divergent opinions both in the classroom and the staff lounge are approved of and encouraged by all members of the community. You build a community of trust with thoughtful and caring adults and students who are willing to take intellectual risk for success. Relationships. The key to all of this is relationships. And it takes some time and work on the part of everyone. To create the culture and climate that I discussed, relationships are the key. Strategies that support positive relationships within the classroom could include programs that allow morning meetings and closing circles. We are a responsive classroom school here at Highland, and every day begins with a morning meeting. Every day ends with closing circles. Students are part of the classroom community. They greet each other every day. They share experiences from both home and school. And if you have a diverse student population, that is key to building those bridges to different cultures. The upside of that also is that the business community is looking for employees that have those soft skills. In our school, we also have what's called a town meeting where the whole school gets together and we share successes in the classroom, successes in the school, and everyone has a voice and an opportunity to share. If you can go to the next slide. I wrote under there, equitable classroom, sorry about that, begins with acknowledging and valuing the culture of the students who are different from oneself, and this is cultural proficiency. It's also embracing the gifts of our special needs populations, what they have to offer. All students need to feel they have a place because their difference is viewed as having value. Cultural diversity is celebrated in the classroom through lessons and the artifacts that are in the room. And although cultural proficiency primarily focuses on cultural and linguistically different diverse students, strategies used to support these students will also support students from poverty, the LGBTQ community, physically challenged students, and everyone will feel like they're part of the school and that they belong. The curriculum should reflect as much as possible the diversity within the classroom as well as a larger school community. The curriculum needs to be accessible to all students with high standards for everyone. It should allow for discourse and multiple perspectives because a positive school climate is safe for those who express those perspectives. Instructional excellence is talking about your teaching staff. Are you supporting and developing their instructional expertise to help teachers develop a repertoire of strategies to support learning? One size doesn't fit all, and strategies need to match the student, the situation, and the curriculum. Teachers should be encouraged to debate, allow for innovation, support professional problem solving, and all students, and this is really key, all students must experience effective instruction on a daily basis. Professional learning, wow, here I could spend more than 5 minutes on professional learning. All staff need to participate in a continuous cycle of learning opportunities that address the changing demographics and the needs of our special education population, second language learners, students who have experienced trauma, and students of poverty. Professional learning should include a variety of formats such as peer collaboration, coaching with a colleague, visiting classrooms, visiting other buildings. As a principal, I know it's hard to get out, but it would be important for you to get out and visit colleagues either in your own district or in another district just to get a sense of what they do and how you can use that information to help and support your staff. Technology is one way that you can utilize to support that professional learning when you have time constraints. Sometimes overlooked but equally important are the professional development needs of non-certified staff, such as your paraeducators. They are often receive the least amount of professional training and are often working with the most demanding students. In our district, we're fortunate that we're able to provide some PD time for our paraprofessionals. So in closing, I'd like to say that creating an inclusive school environment is very important given the changing demographics of our society, that it will take a little work, a little community outreach, but if everyone jumps in and supports this, you can create a very inclusive school where everyone feels welcome and feels like they're a contributing member to the success of the greater of the whole school.
Great. Thank you for expanding our thinking today, Victoria. As mentioned, principals are expected to be instructional leaders for all students. However, when it comes to leadership for students with disabilities, this role can be challenging. Joining us to help clarify the most important information regarding the principal's role, we have Susan Cobb, principal of Center Elementary School in Terre Haute, Indiana. Susan?
Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining us today. I know the topic of special education is hard to tackle in 5 minutes, but I'm certainly going to try to give you some tips and pointers and some things to think about. I am still an elementary school principal, but I've also taken over the role as executive director of special education in our district and some surrounding counties. So it is a new role for me, and it's really helped me this year delineate exactly what principals need to know. So I have a lot of good information for you and hopefully some resources that will help you. Obviously, managing special education as an administrator can be daunting, but it is manageable. This first slide is full of terms and acronyms that are likely familiar to you, and some may need more clarification. Some terms are laws that you should become familiar with, such as IDEA or IDEA, Section 504, ADA, FERPA. All of these are terms that I'm sure you've heard. There are laws that surround these terms, and you really need to at least have an idea about what those mean. Other terms you see are programming terms like co-teaching and inclusion. You also see terms up there that are a little scary to principals, especially new principals, and that's the word advocate and due process. Those can be really, really daunting. But these are all terms that I felt like you really needed to get familiar with. Ultimately, as the principal, you need to ensure that your case conferences and ACRs are covering all key points in an IEP. And you also want to make sure that your parents are fully involved. The job of the principal is to ensure that the IEP is being properly implemented. So you need to know who your students are and what their IEP goals are. Some areas that I wanted to touch on that I feel like you, as especially as new principals, want to keep track of as you attend those IEP meetings and look at an IEP, here's some key points. You need to ensure that your team, your membership team, is present for those case conferences. If you've invited certain members in your building, they need to be there when you have that meeting. And always you need a general education teacher. Don't pull a gen ed teacher out of the hallway who might be walking by into that case conference. You need to ensure that your team is invited in advance and is there. Also, always consider continuum of placement. You might have heard this called LRE, or least restrictive environment. We always want to have our students with special needs in the general education setting as much as possible. And sometimes we have to think outside of the box or be a little creative. I find that principals sometimes get stuck on, well, that's not how we do it around here, or we've never done it that way. You certainly can. You need to think outside of the box and try to ensure that those students are in the gen ed setting as much as possible. Also, make sure as you look at your IEPs that all the components are there, such as provisions and related services and transition services, And again, if you're not real familiar with special ed and IEPs, these are things that you want to look at. Grab an IEP and start going through those and make sure that you understand the items that should be listed in those areas. And again, I find that new principals and new special ed teachers often attempt to predetermine a placement of a special ed student. And I think this is fairly innocent, but you may have a staffing as the principal with your special ed teacher and maybe your gen ed teacher and talk about a placement for a student prior to a conference, and then you get in the conference the next day and you say, well, we already talked about it and this is what we think should happen. That is not okay. You cannot predetermine. So you have to think about all of the possibilities. It's certainly okay to staff, but be sure that you're not predetermining, because that brings me to my next point. Parents' opinions are very valuable, and they need to be considered in every IEP meeting that you have. So keep that in mind. Sometimes, some parents may not have an opinion. They may just trust the school to take care of it, but you need to ensure that they have a place in that meeting and that they can share their concerns and even ideas if they have an idea for a new program or something. So make sure that you're not predetermining. And again, it goes back to ensuring that your staff is implementing every part of that IEP. Okay, next I want to, I'd like to point out, and I'm pretty confident that most of you are doing this, but if you're not already, try to ensure that you have RTI programs or PBIS programs going on in your school. We want to use, RTI is great for a pre-referral process for students who may need evaluated for special education services or may just be struggling. So this is a great time to look at all those positive supports and use those in place of discipline procedures. I love restorative practices, so this is a place that really, really works well with special education students. So if you haven't tried restorative practices, you might look into that. And finally, be sure that you're supportive of your special education staff and your general education staff that teaches special education students. And you can do this by providing professional development, provide the collaboration time they need, look into instructional materials or supplemental materials that they may need. And another thing that my special ed teachers always really enjoy is when I am able to help them with that parent component. If they're struggling trying to communicate with a parent or trying to get a hold of a parent, or there's issues as far as that goes, it's very, very important that you as the principal try to reach out and help in that way. That's always good for them. Okay, and on this last slide, seek advice from. You probably have a local special education director or coordinator that you can call. And if you don't know who that person is, I say try to find out from your colleagues who you need to contact and call that person for help. Sometimes as a new principal, you feel like you don't want to bother somebody or that you your question may seem silly. Don't worry about that. When you're talking about special ed, you are upholding the law, and there are laws around the IEP that you need to follow. So no question is a silly question or a stupid question. You feel free to call out for help. You can always go to your state Department of Education. The Special Education Division has wonderful resources that you can use. U.S. Department of Education also has great resources for you. And finally, I know we're getting short on time. If I were to give you any piece of advice, again, as I switched roles this year and have more emphasis on leading in the special education area, I found a book that is absolutely phenomenal, and I actually went to this session at the NAESP conference last summer. You need to get the book, A Principal's Guide to Special Education, by David and Fred Bateman. It is a quick resource. It gives you all the laws you need to know. It has lots of resources. It's a quick read. I've recommended all my principals in my district to read it and use it, stack it on your desk and have it at your fingertips, maybe along with a copy of Article 7 so that you have a quick resource in that sense when you have questions. And I've also just included some helpful websites. If you haven't checked those out, you might. There's some for some interventions as well as co-teaching ideas. So, again, I really appreciate the time today. I would love to be a resource for you. If you have any questions or concerns or need help or just need to figure out where to go to look up information, please feel free to email me or call me. Thanks.
Thank you, Susan. Certainly, schools can't and principals can't do this work alone. It's imperative that we engage parents and other stakeholders to partner for student success. I'd like to welcome back Dr. Stephen Geis from North Terrell Elementary School in Minnesota. He's going to share relevant ways to engage parents in our work.
Good afternoon again. For all the participants, please don't hesitate to reach out to your colleagues on this call that if you have questions. And one of the things that I want you to keep in mind is that if you bring the ideas back, it's going to be hard to implement. However, if you have a champion in your building that you could say, hey, you know what, that, you know, I really want you to visit with this Susan Cobb regarding special education, have them contact us or myself regarding family engagement so that it could come from your teachers so it's not coming from the top down. Family engagement, as you can see, is one of the strongest predictors of a child's success in school. And that's been research that's been done over the last 40 years. The other thing regarding family engagement is you truly never get a second chance to make a first impression. And what impression are you making with your families? And so when you look at that, I always call it the four C's in the sense of the communication. And there you could take a little quiz that hopefully the eight right there, you would know what they are. The third one in the top row is the one that I mentioned earlier that I would suggest you looking into, that being the Flipgrid. But if you're not communicating, who is? You need to be the storyteller in chief and let your community know what's going on and invite them in. And so when you're inviting them in, that's the convenience. Partner with your middle school and high school students, asking their student leadership to come in and to provide child care services. We have families that still make use of this. They have to call in advance, so then there's no excuse for them not to be able to come in. Then the whole notion of consistency, how are you doing it, and are there multiple ways? Because the reality is when you make a mistake, you'll find out about it via other parents, via Facebook. That's why you need to be out there in the forefront, leading the charge and sharing with them. This year, our teachers have loved the last app in the lower right-hand corner, which is Seesaw. And it's interactive, and you're able to create portfolios, and our K through 2 teachers are communicating constantly, each and every single day. And what's awesome is just last week, I was reading in the classroom an hour before the students went to lunch. And that day I was down in the cafeteria and the kindergarten teacher said 19 of the 22 parents had already responded via Seesaw to the picture that was sent of me reading in the classroom. Because all of this engagement creates that community, and we're going to flip to the next slide, and that community can really work well in all sorts of other activities and the outreach things. And I mentioned earlier on that you never get that second chance to make a first impression, so you're looking at this list going book bundles. We actually, as a team, whether it's a special ed teacher, whether it's our English language learner or myself, deliver a bundle of books to every new citizen. That being when a child is born and we receive the MARS data before the age of 6 months, we're delivering a package introducing ourselves and the resources our community, that being our school and community education, has. It's not a bundle that's hung on a door. We want to be face-to-face to create and to start building that bridge of engagement with the families. Other things, we actually have what's called a PTP, and it's a parent-teacher partnership, where the teachers actually attend the meetings. And so when the teachers come, that they're sharing what's happening. And at those meetings, we never have any sign-ups, that the parents know that they're able to come and they're not going to be recruited for something via volunteering. And so that consistency every time that they come and providing child care. A lot of the things that we're doing are at nights, that whether we're running a book fair for literacy nights or our summer tailgate party, We also do science nights. We do a breakfast with a book. And so we're just trying to bring people in. And then the summer library, if you look over to the right, our library is actually open. And here again, listening to the families, I wish I could say 6 years ago it was my idea to open up our library. It was actually the families. And so for 2 weeks in June, July, and August, our library is open. And our media specialists and assistants actually survey the students and find out what topics they want to explore and research in the summertime. And it's heavily attended. Family nights with dancing and ice cream socials and other volunteer opportunities to come in. One that you should look at and our staff is currently looking at is the Watchdogs, and it's a dad's organization where they come in and spend the entire day in your building. So I look forward to you reaching out, whether it's via Twitter or the internet, email, to ask us further questions and to connect with us and to put us in touch with your lead leaders in the building so they can help lead the charge.
We appreciate you sharing your expertise, Stephen. Thank you. Now, wouldn't it be great if we went to work every day and everyone was cooperative to meet the goals and mission of our school? Perhaps, but it's simply not reality. We're going to encounter difficult people along the way. If you haven't already, just wait. You will. Principal of Columbia Falls Junior High School in Montana, David Wick, will enlighten us to skills and tips he has found helpful in dealing with challenging people. David?
Thank you, Brian. I want to welcome all of you to our webinar today. I'm excited to have the opportunity to share with you some tips that I have. With only 5 minutes, I'm going to spend a little bit more time dealing with difficult people in terms of parents. I know that we'll be dealing with staff members, potentially difficult people who are students. But I think for the principals, the most important thing is, what do we do when a parent comes in or a community member and they're upset about something? So the first thing that I always do in these situations is try to assess the situation and figure out if it's an immediate need or if it's something that can wait until tomorrow. If the parent shows up at our door, obviously they need to be dealt with, but sometimes we get a phone call. I get phone calls late in the day, say at 5 o'clock, and especially if I know the parent, I don't always return the phone call because some of those people who are angry are a lot calmer the next day when I call them, so I wait a little bit before I call them. I look at, assess the situation, what's the level of distress of the person, how upset are they. I have even gone so far as to request police presence. If I know a meeting's happening, I know someone is upset. I also have asked witnesses to be there. Particularly if I have history with the person, I feel like I might need that. I always try to meet the person in person rather than over the phone, but that's not always possible. I set ground rules, not necessarily with the person, but in my own mind and approach. I don't do it in a way that offends the person, but I try to make sure that I know in my head what I'm going to accept and what I'm not. For example, if profanity or threats come into the conversation, I am quick to say, you know, we're not going to use profanity, and if this continues, I'm going to end the phone call or end the meeting until you can be calmer. I will always treat you with respect, and so I expect the same from you. That's the main ground rule that I use. I try to make sure that everybody knows in communication we're going to be very positive. Third thing is I try to project an open image and tone. I probably should have also said I'm going to project calm. When that person is quite upset, I try to be as calm as possible in every different way that I can. I use an open body posture with them. I often pull my chair around my desk, so there's not a desk in between my presence and the person. So I pull my chair around so I'm close to them and lean in as I'm interested in what they have to say. I always have a notebook with me and take notes of what they say. Sometimes I have to slow them down and say, could you slow down just for a moment while I'm taking some notes here? And that is telling them that I am open to what they're saying in many different ways. I have some practical catchphrases that I use that probably all of you are already using, but in case you don't have them, I always use how may I help you today, what can I do for you or your student today, always looking for those things that assure them that I am here as an advocate for them. Often they're angry about something that doesn't really have anything to do with me, but they want me to do something about it. So usually that's a good place to be. I can be the intermediary for them. The next one is probably undoubtedly the most important, and that's just to listen. I wrote that three times there just for emphasis. It's the main key. While I'm taking my notes, I nod. I agree with them. I try to find things that I can agree with them on. One of the techniques I use is to say, I understand that you're upset about this. Why don't you detail it for me? I can understand you're upset because I'm a parent also. I've been around a lot of students, so I understand your concern about that. I would be concerned about that also. And so very important not to interrupt and to allow them to talk. You might just ask clarifying questions, but especially if it's a personal attack towards you, then I spend even more time listening and try not to interrupt, even though I don't necessarily agree with what they're saying. Sometimes their anger will just wind itself down if you listen, and so that's a lot of times my goal is to just let that anger wind down after a few minutes of intentional listening. I try to offer solutions. If I can offer an immediate solution to their problem, I will go get the person that they want to talk to and clarify. There's all kinds of different things that can occur in terms of eligibility or turning an assignment in or something like that. Sometimes I have to finally get to a point where I say to them, would it be okay for me to respond now to what you're saying? And, if they're not ready for me to, I set up another time to meet with them. Always say, may I look into this and get back to you, because I don't really know what happened, but I will do everything I can. Always try to discuss the varying perceptions that we have. We talk about student perceptions, and I try to get in that, we may not see things exactly the same. I don't believe your student is necessarily lying about this when I get to a resolution, but I think that wasn't their perception that something had happened. But often those perceptions are different between people. One of my practical pieces of advice is never say never. I made the mistake early on in my principal career when somebody accused one of my teachers of doing something. I said that person would never do that. I had to eat those words because the person actually did and suffered disciplinary consequences as a result. So I would recommend never using those terms. If it's a continuing disagreement, very difficult person I have to deal with, I try to make time for the person, but I set boundaries. For example, an agreement with my secretary to say, if I'm still in there in 10 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever the time boundary is, please knock on the door and say, remember that you have that other meeting. Sometimes people are difficult enough that I have to set those boundaries. Often say, we might have to agree to disagree on this, and then I offer them my supervisor's telephone number. Hopefully I forewarn my supervisor about that, but I often say to them, if you really can't agree with what I have to say, you can move forward to talk to your supervisor. So I know these were all about parents, and I only had just a few minutes, but I wanted to focus on, I think that's the most difficult people that we have to deal with. If there are people on your staff, I have some other recommendations. I'd be happy to visit with you at any time. Please call me, email me, or contact me, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you for your participation. I wish you the best for the rest of the school year, and we're excited to have you participate today. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Well, no surprise, the principalship can be hard, physically, emotionally, mentally, socially. There is a constant demand for our time and energy. And that's just during the school day. Where does our personal life fit in? Cass Nelson is principal of Visai Elementary School in Oklahoma. She's going to share tips and strategies she has found helpful in maintaining balance. Cass?
Good afternoon, everyone. I would just like to also say thank you for joining us. We're excited that you're here to learn with us, and I have definitely enjoyed listening in to my colleagues as they share about the various topics. Balance, man, where do we even start? Because like Brian said, we are overwhelmed. When we think about balance and the definition of balance, prioritizing the aspects of our jobs and the aspects of our personal lives and our lifestyles. Now, some people think that balance means an equal amount of time for maybe work or maybe a work and your hobby or your family, but I have not found that to be the case. Why do we need to have balance? Why can't we do everything? I have to apologize to you right here at the beginning of my presentation. I am struggling with balance today because I'm currently at my team's state quarterfinals basketball game where they are at halftime right now, and I am speaking to you all. But we can't do everything. I can't see my quotes on the screen, but those two I feel like really speak to me when thinking about why we need to have balance. Why can't we do everything? Well, regardless of what we may think, we're not superheroes, although we feel like it a lot of times. But if we do everything or try to do everything, we're going to burn out. We're going to be stressed. Our health is going to fail quickly. Another great reason is that we should share our leadership. Let's let others lead. Let's empower the members of our staff and strengthen our organization, and thus taking some of that load off of ourselves as leaders. Principals, like Brian said, we have so many daily and even hourly demands. So you may be thinking to yourself as a new leader, how could I ever find balance? There's just too much to do. I think a lot of us go into this profession thinking there's just so much to do. And so here are some things, some tips and strategies that I've collected that might help you. Okay, let's look at these in three different areas, our professional, our family, and our personal lives. Professionally, while we're at work, something I do is I make a list of three things that I want to get done during the day. And those are three overall goals. And then whatever falls into place during that day falls into place. But I've got a list of priorities for the day. One of my biggest priorities is being with students. So you kind of have to step back and think about what are your priorities at work? One of mine is being with students. So whether that's in classrooms, playing with them at PE, greeting them at the front door, eating lunch with them, or sliding down the slide at recess, I make that a priority, and I find balance in my job by being in the moment with them. I make a conscious effort to not get distracted or be distracted when I'm with students by those emails from upset parents or by the 60 or 70 emails that have come in my inbox just that morning. So I would recommend to be in the moment. Take in your surroundings. Take in your kids, the kids' smiles, and listen to their voices and laughter, and I promise that it will change your day, and it will change your outlook on your work. Speaking of emails, there's another one. I've spoken to a lot of people who emails are very overwhelming. Maybe a suggestion would be to take them off your phone. I have colleagues who do that. And they take, or maybe they turn their email off on the weekend or on a long break. Maybe you would want to, or maybe it would be a good idea to set some boundaries as far as when you're going to answer emails. Are you going to answer emails in the evening? But I say that, and my next sentence I follow that up with is, don't feel bad about leaving work at work, okay? And let's see. Social media is another struggle that we all have as far as our work aspect of our life. Social media is a very impactful tool for leaders. I am a huge proponent of PLNs, but we have to set limits and never lose sight that our families are the most important. Real face-to-face conversations over dinner or family game night are irreplaceable. So social media does have its place, but we can't allow it to draw a wedge between our personal relationships. My next point, I'm going to reiterate it. It's okay to leave work at work. The next one is show gratitude. I have found that in showing gratitude to my family, to my staff, that has given me balance at work. we know there are lots of negative things that go on at school. And Dave just spoke with you about dealing with a lot of challenges and challenges that have to do with parents. But when you start to look at the other side and are thankful for your staff and your students and your community, your school surroundings, I promise it will change your outlook as well and give you balance. Finally, create a supportive and positive PLN. Surround yourself with those people, whether it's face-to-face or virtually on social media. Surround yourself with the people who are going to feed your soul with positivity and help you achieve a peace each day. Then in our personal is a little bit different because we have people who love us and care for us. And so we want to give back to them. We want to give that same love and care to them, but it's a very tough struggle. So because our well-being positively impacts those around us, here's some suggestions. Maybe, I know you've heard this word before because it's becoming a buzzword, unplug. Turn your phone off. I have a friend, Adam Welcome. He's one of the co-authors of Kids Deserve It, and he says, put your phone on airplane mode and live. And I have followed his advice several times. Maybe on the weekend you want to put your phone on airplane mode. I would definitely think about a vacation where, you know, you're just unplugged. You're spending your time enjoying your family and your vacation. Another idea would be to get active or stay active. Exercise in any form reduces stress, anxiety, and it helps us to cope with adversity. I can talk about this one firsthand. 3 years ago, I began running pretty much daily, and I have seen a big difference in the amount of, or in the outlook that I have on my position at school. It gives me some me time. It gives me some time to think and relax, de-stress, and I'm also doing something healthy for my body. Next, don't abandon your hobbies. Just because you're a leader and there's a lot of work to do, as I said, don't abandon your hobbies. Continue to fish, read, shop, golf. Whatever it is that you love to do, do more of that. That will help you find balance. And finally, spend some quality time with your family. Not just some. Spend quality time with your family. This is where unplugging comes into play. This is where being intentional with forming your relationships with your family, sitting down to eat dinner, having those conversations, putting the phone down, which is a struggle at my house for myself because I'm very connected, and as I said, I believe in being connected, but don't want it to drive a wedge into our relationships with our families. So I know we were running short on time, so I'm going to sum it up really quick with, there's no magic formula to find balance in our lives. Each one of us has to take steps, find strategies, go through a process of trial and error to see what works for each of us. And yes, as I admitted today, I feel a little out of balance, like I'm trying to juggle two or three balls at one time. But it's what you can do, or it's taking a step back and reflecting on that and then getting that balance back. Because we all are going to face adversity. We're all going to face challenges in our careers and in our jobs, especially as new administrators. So it's gaining that back. It's reflecting and gaining that back. That is so important. And as I said, some think balance means an equal amount of time for each thing that you might have that's important, each priority. But that's not the case. Finding balance is not easy, but it is so important. As early administrators, I know, the desire to be successful and to feel successful at our job will pose a challenge on finding balance. So to that, I would say this. wake up each day, I'm able to wake up each day loving my job and finding joy in what I do every day. Now, I know there are aspects of our jobs that are not enjoyable, but finding balance has helped me be stressed less, accomplish more, and really enjoy being a principal. And I want to encourage you, if you are on social media, there are three members of my PLN whom I have met through NAESP, through chats and the NAESP conference, and they are Jessica Johnson, Sarah Johnson, and Jessica K. Bean, and they are working right now on a book titled Balance Like a Pirate. And there's a hashtag on Twitter. It's hashtag balance LAP. That stands for like a pirate. If you are interested in more strategies or tips or want to reach out to myself or to any of these three ladies, I know they would be absolutely wonderful to engage in a conversation about balancing your professional and personal life. And I, again, thank you for participating in this chat. Please don't hesitate to holler at me if you want to continue the conversation.
Thank you so much, Cass. Wow, what a great conversation. Thank you to everyone who contributed today. Perhaps during our time together, a question has surfaced or you'd like further clarification about an area. We have just a couple minutes left, so if you have a question, feel free to enter that into the chat box, and we will have one of our panelists or myself will answer any questions that you may have. Okay, it looks like there was a question about Stephen's app. It was the Flipgrid app that they've already responded, and then Honor passed on that tip from Cass as well about balance like a pirate. I might also add, two of our national distinguished principals, Jessica and Jessica Cabin and Johnson, are both national distinguished principals, NASP national distinguished principals from their respective states. So congratulations to them on this new journey as well. So it's been a great time together today, but this is only the beginning. We would like to keep these conversations going. Topics such as these today and many more will be shared at the NASP Summer Conference, July 9th through 11th in Orlando, Florida. We would love for you to join us. Sean Covey, Daniel Pink, and Sal Khan are just a few of the renowned speakers who will be joining us for our spectacular event. There will be countless concurrent sessions, networking opportunities, and vendors to serve the needs of pre-K-8 principals. NASP also offers additional opportunities for principal growth and leadership through our National Panel of New Principals, Webinar Wednesdays, National Mentoring Program, Pre-K-3 Leadership Academy, Principals of Leadership Institute, and After School and Summer Learning Program. Be watching for the release of the NASP 10-Year Leadership Study that will highlight reflections from veteran principals, early career principals, as well as assistant principals in the coming weeks. The work of our Diversity Task Force will also be releasing their findings, the Principal's Guide to Building Culturally Responsive Schools, in the very near future. NASP is your go-to source for principal leadership. Check out specific information on these and many more professional learning opportunities on the NASP website. Once again, thank you for joining us. We wish you much success as you move through the remainder of the school year. As always, if anyone at NASP can assist you in your leadership journey, please do not hesitate to reach out. Have a great afternoon, and thanks again for joining us.